Welcome to Module 2, Wave Surfing and Cognitive Rehearsal. This module focuses on naming and validating our emotions and restructuring our relationships and response to them. As we learned throughout this program, emotions are incredibly powerful. We've developed negative associations with many of the feelings, particularly those labeled as bad, such as anger, sadness, frustration, depression, anxiety, and of course, shame. We've spent years trying to decondition ourselves to have or be affected by these feelings, only to have them bubble up and slap us in the face at the most inopportune times. This does nothing but reinforce the feedback loop to and for our shame. Reaching our goals and continuing in this work requires us to develop a new way to thinking about them. So as we move forward in this phase of work, our next step is to relearn how to engage with our emotional selves and the ways in which we can build a bridge to experiencing and working through our emotions. Step one in this process is to write a working job description for your emotions. As we've learned in this program, they play a significant part in our daily lives and overall well-being. So let's get clear on exactly what role we want and need them to take. What are their strengths? What value do they have for us as we consider that connection to self and our goals? Your worksheet will ask you a series of questions pertaining to your emotions to clearly define what emotions are and the role they play in living a values-driven life in pursuit of your goals and well-being. We'll be very intentional here to also develop a validation statement to support that we are, at our core, emotion-driven beings, and that emotions are neutral experiences. Once you've done this, we can make our way to step two. Here, we'll get a little more granular and break down the umbrella of emotions into the different feelings that we actually experience. So what are your body's primary emotions to signal and communicate to and with you? Do a sweep of recent months or weeks and consider some of the different emotions that you felt. Consider the highs and the lows in your days and the emotions that seem to tether themselves to these experiences. List out the emotions you seek and the ones you avoid and fear. You may find it helpful to go back to that emotions list that I referenced in Phase 2B, Module 5, or dive deeper into Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart if you find that understanding what you're feeling or how to name it still feels just out of reach. From here, we'll list out our triggers for each emotion. So who, what, when, and why lead us to feel this way? Note that sometimes you'll just feel a certain way and there isn't really a because. So that is always a possibility. But here, we're just trying to capture anything we know can trigger these emotions. Then we're going to reflect on what we fear or don't like and what we gain, love, or learn through each emotion. This will help us begin to see more clearly the current working relationship we have with each emotion. You'll also consider what you were taught, observed, and experienced with these emotions. Step three is then about clarifying the effects these emotions have on us. What do you think and do when you feel X? What's the automatic response? When you can't slow yourself down, how do you respond? What's been the domino effect caused by your reactions to and relationship with different emotions? An important distinction to have you consider here is the difference between primary and secondary emotions. Often, we experience surface or primary emotions that cover up deeper or secondary emotions. So, for example, feeling scared or ashamed and hiding it through anger or ambivalence. Anger is the primary emotion used to cover up the secondary emotion of shame or fear. The idea here is that we show less vulnerable emotions as a means of protection. We'll also consider the physical effects on the body when we feel a given emotion and how that ties back into the feedback loop of reactivity. We'll address the body more in Module 3, but really right now what I want you to try and be as detailed as possible in is how we connect the physical effects or feelings and our emotions. Now, as we wrap up Step 3, we'll reflect on what it's like to see your emotional response system mapped out and how your emotions will act as a barrier to your goals and intentions if we don't change our relationship with and response to them. This part right here is what generates buy-in for making the change that we're moving into with step four. So as we begin step four, we're going to answer the question, what are your emotions trying to tell you? So let's step back from our reaction and consider, what are they communicating when they show up? Again, go back to that job description in step one. The important distinction here is that what they're telling us is often different from what we interpret them to be saying, and subsequently how we act or react. It's easy to associate our judgment of or reaction to the emotion with what they're trying to say, but those are two different orbs. If I feel embarrassed when Jordan is maybe looking over my shoulder while I try to flip a pancake and then I mess it up, my reaction might be to lash out or to tell him to look away. Reflecting on it, I might assume that I was angry or annoyed at Jordan. But the reality is, the embarrassment is a signal of shame, suggesting that not being perfect in the pancake flip is a risk to my standing in Jordan's eyes, or that perfection-driven performance that we know shame has tethered us to. The invitation in this emotion is to check in with why I feel embarrassed, and then allow myself to be vulnerable enough to feel it, name it, and talk about it, not try to hide or deflect it. Once we get clear on what they're telling us, and again, separating that out from our assumptions and reactions, let's go back to the domino idea, and instead of thinking about how we react when we feel X, consider how you want to respond. Who do you want to be in those moments when those emotions arise? How does the situation unfold if you focus on what it's telling you and not the story you tether to it? You'll find that a lot of the work here will be around those traditionally labeled negative or bad emotions, as opposed to positive ones, though it is going to be important to make sure you check in with all of them as you do this work. So think about, how would a different response change the downstream course? For example, if I were to laugh when I flopped the pancake flip instead of yelling at Jordan and shutting down, would that have changed the way that I engaged with him the rest of the morning, or the vibe in our house as we sat down for breakfast? Does it affect the safety and engagement in our relationship? Does it help me in the larger goal of dismantling my shame and unwiring that shame defense pattern anytime I feel embarrassment? Can I see the embarrassment as an invitation to be seen on a deeper level and ride the wave of discomfort? It'll be helpful for you to consider the work you did in phase three to define your values, as ultimately going through all of this, the question is really, how does changing your response better align with your values? How does it work in the battle to combat shame and support you in your relentless pursuit of living that life? Now, in our next step, we'll put all of this together to practice the skill of cognitive rehearsal. You'll find that this is a skill you can use to help you address changes and work in any of the four TFAC pillars. See, cognitive rehearsal is about playing through scenarios in your head and rehearsing how you'll act, react, think, talk in relation to that sort of trigger point. To do this most effectively for you and your long-term goals, we'll go through each emotion with which we're striving to make a change and lay out a situation, interaction, or experience that we assume could or will happen, to trigger it as if we move forward in this work. What's going to make us scared, sad, angry, ashamed? Once we know the situation, we're going to slowly envision your response plan from step four. What happens? What do you feel? How can you make space to name and validate that feeling? How can you respond? What's the internal narrative that you want to hear, and how will the work of your SUDS chart help you? What sense of resolve do you experience, and how do you feel afterward? And most importantly, how will this continue to support you in your quest to do and be the most important things in your life? Now, this step is particularly helpful because cognitive wiring and rewiring is essential in our work. You may have heard the phrase, neurons that fire together, wire together. If we always put a certain emotion with a reaction, these two signals will fire almost instantaneously. We've conditioned ourselves to experience certain emotions in given situations and react in a set way when the emotion arises. That's a double whammy of cognitive reactive firing. So cognitive rehearsal allows you to start the process of unwiring these neuronal pairs and wiring new pathways to respond. The more you invite this alternative response into your cognitive processing, the greater likelihood you'll be able to access this new, less reactive route when the situation occurs in real time. One skill you can use in support of this process is referred to as wave surfing. So wave or urge surfing is something I worked with clients a lot on in eating disorder treatment. If they had the urge to engage in an eating disorder behavior or were triggered by a complex emotion, we would work on using distress tolerance skills to create distance between that trigger and a behavior until the emotion dissipated. See, remember, emotions are transient. They ebb and flow in intensity. So wave surfing is about feeling that wave, but waiting to do anything with it until it reaches its low point or dissolves itself into the sand. This allows space for that mindful pause to bridge the emotion to a more constructive response. So as you go through this final step, rehearse these different scenarios. Infuse that idea of wave surfing. Give space to name and validate the emotion in these different settings and check in with how you can and want to show up while you do that. Ask yourself what space you're going to need. Consider the tools and supports on your distress tolerance chart. And finally, you can begin to experiment, to bring the work from the cognitive or visualization space to the real world. So when the assumed situations present themselves, what happens? If you find yourself reacting, does it feel different? Are you able to recognize it, or does it feel a little bit different as it settles into your body? What's making the shift difficult to go from reacting to responding? Are there things that we haven't accounted for or considered? Are you finding yourself impatient and not riding that wave long enough? Do you trust the wave will dissipate? Subsequently, how does it feel when you engage in the response plan? How does it compare to your vision? What can you pull from this to build momentum to wire this new pathway? Remember, this, like almost every other skill in this program, is iterative. You've spent years plus engaging in these reactive patterns, meaning that it is going to take time and momentum to swing the pendulum from reacting to responding. At the end of the day, it's about having a growth mindset as you learn. Give yourself the grace to know that emotions are incredibly complex, and we are only just now starting to understand them and how we can work our response plans around them. That means we have to give ourselves the time to do it in meaningful and sustainable ways to our own stories. So with that, we are a wrap for Module 2. Take your time, be sure to use self-care along the way, and when you are ready, I'll see you back here for Module 3.